2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America, but this story is still unfolding. I'm Andreas Martin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at kslpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Good morning. Welcome back to the KSL Greenhouse. Maria Chaleos, Tan Bettis with you. Cameron Alcott from Progressive Plants is joining us this morning. And let's take a call now from Alex in American Fork. Good morning, Alex. What is your question this morning?
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you all doing today?
We're doing very well. What can we help you with this morning?
Well, you know, I know a lot of plants that after they've been through some breeding, they're not as good for honeybees or native bees. And I'm wondering about some of these plants that Cameron's talking about today, if those are going to be good for me to plant, you know, that will help the honeybees and help the native bees, or if some of those traits have maybe been bred out.
Hi, Alex. How's it going?
Just fine.
Honestly, I don't know the answer to that question on a lot of these like newer varieties. That was like, you know, they weren't marketed to us that way. As far as like being good for pollinators or whatnot. So I'll probably know a little bit more once I have them at the nursery during the season.
The best I could do with it as a general rule, if it's still a single flower,
yeah,
then it's usable for pollinators. If it's double, then no.
Right.
I've noticed on some of the sedums that that's not necessarily the case, and I was hoping that we already had some experience on that. But thanks for the answer, guys, and I'll be keeping an eye on them.
Sounds good.
Thanks for your call this morning. Let's go to Kay in West Jordan. Good morning, Kay. Kay, how can we help you this morning?
I have some roses that I have transplanted, and both of them, they're different roses, different plants, and I don't know what they are because they were from other sources, from a building that got torn down. I pulled them up. Anyway. They have grown these, what I call canes, just these really long, long 6 or 7 or 8 foot branches with lots of leaves on them. What do I do with them?
Are they from the rootstock?
Well, I assume so, yeah.
Well, if they're coming off the roots, you don't want them because usually modern roses have been grafted. And the rootstock will take over, and it's oftentimes a wild rose that will get 10 or 12 feet high. The only flower once a year, and it will eat puppies and small children if they get too close.
Yeah, and if you transplanted them from another building, that's a very high probability that it stressed them out enough that they decided that they wanted a sucker from the rootstock. So you may not necessarily be cultivating the rose that you want.
Okay, so but the rest of the rose bush looks fine. So I just cut those down at the ground.
Yeah, I would get rid of those suckers for sure. And that way it'll try to force the rose to put its growth into the desirable part of the foliage.
Okey-doke. I appreciate it because I love the roses that I do have.
All right, Kay. Thanks for your call this morning. Let's take our next text question. This person says they have a variegated hydrangea that has never bloomed, and I've learned that this person's much more patient than I am. They've waited about 10 years. They planted it on the north side of the house. And they're wondering if that's the problem.
A variegated hydrangea?
I wonder if it's another macrophylla. There's some back in the day,
okay.
I remember a lot of variegated hydrangea, big leaf hydrangeas. One thing I've noticed with this kind of the ominous species, the hydrangea macrophylla that's wildly popular outside of Utah, is you'll plant one and it can be healthy and just sometimes they just never bloom.
Well, yeah, because like a lot of the old macrophyllas, I mean, those were old wood bloomers and a lot of times they die back to the ground here.
Yeah, they die back to the ground.
So
then there's no old wood to bloom.
Aww. They're not completely hardy, or people decide to trim them in the spring and cut all the flower buds off. So I would try leaving it alone and just for a year or two and see what it does.
Yeah.
Don't trim it unless it's dead wood.
Right.
They're just much more patient than I am. After 10 years, I'd have given up for sure.
Well, the new varieties of Endless Summers, they've actually developed those to bloom off of new and old wood. Hmm. So like Bloomstruck, There's another one, Twist and Shout. I think they both bloom off of new and old wood. So
you might be happier with a different variety.
Newer varieties are definitely performing a lot better than the older ones.
All right, Jared is texting us from the Camas Valley. He wants to know if there are any columnar evergreens that will grow in the Camas Valley, and where would he get them?
I've got a lot that would work. I think columnar Austrian pines would work. There's one that's called Frank that's really nice. There's Arnold Sentinel. Your main concern up there in Camas is deer. Otherwise, you're going with like columnar blue spruce. That's going to be your safest option.
And those can be tough because if they get snow on them and you don't
they
knock
bend
it off,
out. Yep.
They can get kind of forlorn looking. And so I like that Arnold Sentinel. What would you think of some of the more compact and columnar Mugos?
Columnar Mugos would probably do really well up there. On my website, you can probably just Google in the search engine, just put Mugo in there, and it'll probably bring up a whole bunch. But they would probably do better and probably be a little bit more deer resistant too. So that's probably the best option that I can think of without really getting into that.
All right, next texter wondering whether the crabapple, will any crabapple grow to 30 feet high? Do you have one that grows that tall?
Spring snow is one of the bigger ones.
Crabapples eventually, especially older standard ones, will eventually get 25 to 30 feet, but it can take up to 50 years.
Yeah,
if you wanted something that height, it's a different tree, but maybe like a Merlot bird cherry. You know, there's some medium-sized flowering trees that Merlot sometimes has some suckers on it. Do you have anything?
Not that I can really think of. There's a new choke cherry coming out, or that's out, called Sucker Punch. That was developed by my buddy Scott over at Fort Collins Wholesale over in Colorado. I saw the parent tree for that, but it's a Canada Red choke cherry that doesn't sucker, which is nice. Mm. And those can get
25
feet, maybe?
A lot of these front yard ornamental flowering trees, unfortunately, are about 25. Sargent cherry, do you carry any of those?
We're carrying some newer ones like First Blush. That's an actual.
Are they going to stay down that 20, 25 feet too?
Yeah, I can't really think of like any flowering trees that get really above 25, other than like, you know, Catalpa.
Yeah, and that one's got a whole host of messy issues, I guess. Yeah. The seeds drop everywhere, and it's kind of the branches break out.
Oh, horse chestnut.
Horse chestnut.
Like the
Briatii.
Yeah, Briatii. That's the one that I'm thinking. That's a really pretty one.
Do you have any of the horse chestnuts that don't produce the seeds or the nuts?
That's a good question. I don't know if we did those this year. I'd have to look at my production list and see. This is a hard thing when you have
red horse chestnut would be one that would be pretty, but it would have some seeds on it. And it's a gorgeous tree.
Yeah.
All right, a next texter wants to be reminded of which of the colorful crab apples that you mentioned get 6 to 8 feet tall or 8 to 10 feet tall.
Oh, there's a whole bunch of short ones. Royal Gem is the short lollipop one that I'm really excited about that's new this year. But you can use Sargentina, Cinderella, Coral Burst, Firebird.
There are so many.
There's so
I've
many.
Grown Coral Burst and Sargentina, and both of those are fine. The Coral Burst gets maybe 12,
yeah,
but it's got really pretty flowers on it. Mm-hmm. One of my buddies up in Layton has it on his patio, and it's just especially when it's in bloom, it's a gorgeous tree.
Yeah, I love crab apples. They need to be used more, as far as I'm concerned.
Right, we need to go back and address the pruning of hydrangeas. You mentioned this a little bit last time and how some of them bloom on old wood, but this person's saying that they cut the stems down last year. Did they do a bad thing? So what is the general pruning of a hydrangea?
It all depends on the species.
It does.
And even the cultivar.
Yep. If it's a panicle hydrangea, they're the easiest ones to deal with. Usually somewhere between like February and March before they start leafing out, the panicle hydrangeas, you can prune back by a third to up to 50% each year, and they will come back and they will bloom spectacularly. The quercifolias, they usually seem to kind of die down to the ground at the end of every year anyway. But and then macrophyllas, the new ones, it doesn't really matter when you prune them. They'll be fine because they bloom off of old and new wood. But the Older macrophyllas like Nico Blue are an old wood bloomer only, and the only time that you prune them is after they bloom in the summer, if they bloom for you at all.
Okay, I should tell folks, when you text us, you cannot text us pictures. So someone has texted me a picture, which I cannot receive in this way. You can put pictures on our KSL Greenhouse Facebook page. But this person says they have a Minnesota snowflake. It's mock orange, about 8 years old. It's never fully bloomed. It gets a few blossoms, but not a lot. They've never pruned it because Larry Sager's told them that they shouldn't until the branches are mature enough. When are the branches mature enough, first of all?
As long as I've been doing the show, that should be well mature. And sometimes I even see this in mock orange, that they even sometimes 1 in 10, 1 in 15 just never blooms well. Pruning.
Oh, mine's pretty.
Yeah. Sometimes has to do with that, but if they're not doing that, what I might do is renewal prune it to where you take the oldest branches out and do about 20 to 25%, and you would cut those out as near the base as you reasonably can and let the younger wood, which is going to be anywhere from 1 to 2 or 3 years old, see what that does and see if taking out some of the oldest stuff helps. But every once in a while, I see mock orange that for whatever reason just never decides to start blooming a lot.
Yeah, and I don't really like mock orange because I've seen like really inconsistent performance out of them. So I'm not really surprised to hear that. What I will say, though, is that I have seen better performance out of newer cultivars that have come out. There's one that's called Snowbell. I think that one's a little bit shorter. I think it's like somewhere between like 3 to 5 feet, somewhere around there. And then there's another one called Snow White Fantasy. Those two varieties of mock orange are way better performers, and they smell a lot better too.
All right. The number to call with your questions, 801-575-8255, or you can text us at 57500. We'll be right back.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.
Thanks for spending your morning with the KSL Greenhouse Show. Maria Ton and Cameron with you this morning, taking your calls and questions. Questions at 57500, and we'll take your calls at 801-575-8255. One person just mentioned they just joined the show, briefly caught a part of what you mentioned about plants and bees, and could you please repeat that information for them?
They need to put a quarter in the... I'm just kidding.
Stop.
Okay, I'll stop.
Stop.
So a lot of these new plants, we don't know performance with bees. And
nope, we don't.
So what I can say as a general rule, the fancier the flower and the more petals, like a double rose is a lot harder for a bee to get into to get the pollen out than a single, almost like wild rose. Mm-hmm. Not always true, but a general rule. And so again, there's a lot of exceptions, but for me, a general rule, if they have single flowers, and that just means one set of petals, and you can see the little parts inside of it, then that most likely will be usable for pollinating insects and not just bees. Not always the case, but it's just something that you have to see how it plays out.
Yeah, and it's just experimentation. I mean, that's what gardening is anyway. It's just a whole
if you have a yard full of flowering plants and you have, and I will not just single out bees, but a yard full of pollinating insects, and you have 4 or 5 things blooming at once and there's no insects on the particular plant, it's probably not usable to them as a pollen or a food source.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's take a call this morning from Lon in Stockton. Good morning, Lon. What is your question?
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Appreciate that. We've got we're about 4 miles west of Stockton, and we, in our grass in the backyard, we've got this reddish-colored weed coming up, and it's kind of like a ground cover, and it's kind of, it seems to be spreading quite a bit. So we need to know how to treat that.
Well, I mean, that's one of those things that unfortunately a lot of things that are evergreen turn red over the winter because they withdraw the green chlorophyll down to the roots and you're left with red pigments in there. So, but I might, my gut suspicion is something like red stem fillery. Are they round and low to the ground?
Yes, very low to the ground, and, right at grass level.
Okay, yeah. And do they get pink flowers a little later, like February, March, April?
I'm sorry, say that again?
Do they get pink flowers that kind of just poke up 3 or 4 inches above the ground in February, March, and April?
No, I haven't seen any. I haven't seen them flower, but it just seems to be spreading and getting bigger.
What I would do is take some pictures of it and go into your extension office in Tooele and talk to Lyndon Greenhalgh. He's your extension agent. He's very well versed with weeds. And if it's not this red stem fillery, he will be able to tell you what it is.
Okay, I'll do that.
So make sure they're in focus. Just saying, sometimes their cell phones aren't very good at that. But do take some pictures and take them to Lyndon, and I'll bet you he can identify them very quickly.
Okay, sounds good. Thank you very much, Sam.
Thanks for your call this morning. The next texter has a question about a grassy area that has been churned to mud by their dogs. Boy, I can understand this question. But they say this area never grew grass well before they got the dogs. So they want to know if it would be a good idea to plant some sort of ground cover.
There's nothing that will hold up to those regular dogs. Traffic from animals or humans. So I would recommend just taking it out and putting some gravel or something down that won't hurt their paws. And just call it, because dogs track through the yard, oftentimes along fences where they're kind of checking out and see what's going on outside of the yard and things. And there's just nothing that will hold up to it ground cover wise or grass wise. And you just have to put something there that'll tolerate the foot traffic better than plants.
And maybe it's a situation where you can kind of turn it into like a planting bed, to kind of landscape it, make it pretty.
And if they've churned up and turned it into absolute mud, you're probably going to need some compost mm-hmm. to try to help restore that, because it does, a churning like that does ruin the topsoil characteristics, the good soil characteristics of it.
All right. Next texter wondering if the hydrangea can flourish in heavy clay soil if they cannot amend it.
The hydrangea paniculatas, the panicle hydrangeas, they don't really care where they're growing. They seem to do fine wherever you put them. They've been pretty tough. The other ones can be a little iffier. I'm hopeful on the mountain hydrangea, the tough stuff. Those have actually been holding up pretty well in my mom's yard, and she's got some pretty clay soil as well.
Okay. So. Next texter wants to know, they are looking for a tall privacy hedge. They need an evergreen. Would an English laurel survive in Brigham City?
It depends on the amount of afternoon shade. If they are in an area that's a south exposure, so it's getting sun all day, I would never do that because they scorch, especially when the ground freezes. But if it was against a north wall or the north side of a fence, I might consider a dwarf English laurel. And keep it hedged down below the fence so it gets afternoon shade. The other thing is that English laurels are like deer candy, especially in the winter.
Yeah, I mean, it's the same thing with yews, too. I mean, that's the only other thing that I could think of that would be evergreen. But yews are toxic to deer. I know they were banned up in Idaho for that.
Well, Idaho's had several incidences where deer... it's dozens of them have just been dead in an area, and they traced it back and they'd eaten these ewes. Mm-hmm. And so people with horses and cows and things need to be cautious with those. The euonymus, Japanese euonymus, would do probably fairly well. Sometimes they'll tolerate sun a little better, not always. But, I mean, for broadleaf evergreen stuff, there's really not a lot of great options if it's sunny.
All right, we're running out of time. Cameron, I want to make sure people know how to get a hold of you. Cameron Alcott, Progressive Plants. Do you have a Facebook page, or how do people find you?
Yeah, we actually moderate a Facebook group called Utah Gardeners, so you can find me on there if you want to really interact. We also have a Facebook page for Progressive Plants, which we're really active on.
Great.
Or you can just visit our website, progressiveplants.com.
All right, thanks for joining us this morning for The Greenhouse Show.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.